hour later than what we had originally advertised, and an hour and a half later than what we originally posted. With that, Legislative Fiscal Office is represented by Lori Barley, and we're staffed by clerk today, Suki Huerta, and we will continue on with this public hearing on Senate Bill 874 and House Bill 3441. These relate to Jobs Plus programs within the state of Oregon. Lori, will you remind us, please, where we were at when we last met?
Chair Butler, members of the subcommittee, on Tuesday, we talked about both of these bills. Senate Bill 874 is a bill that makes changes to the Jobs Plus program, specifically for those participants that are eligible for unemployment insurance. House Bill 3441 is the bill that provides diversion funding from the unemployment insurance taxes in the system to pay for the program. On Tuesday, we discussed some of the program changes as well as the funding piece, and at that time, there were some issues that still need to be resolved between the proponents of the bill and the Employment Department, among other interested parties, and I believe they have some information to bring forward today and share with the subcommittee.
Great. John, would you like to come forward and introduce yourself for the record?
Sure.
And maybe we could do that. Ms. Crosley, would you come forward on behalf of the Employment Department? And we'll both swear you under oath that...
Hi, my name is John Courtney with Gerald Wynn. And we have worked with the governor's office and Ms. Crosley of the Employment Department to propose to you some amendments to Senate Bill 874 and House Bill 3441. I can say that in our last hearing, we talked about discussions that we were having about how the program would be funded and the number of participants that would be able to participate in the program each year. The number that had been on the table was 2,450 participants. That compares with what this year would have been had we gone 12 months of over 4,000. Unfortunately, the governor's office is looking at 2,450 for several reasons as being the most they believe is appropriate to do, and we're proposing then that together that we move forward on that basis. I have
2,450 participants for the next what period?
For each year, for the next 4 years. That represents about a cut of a third to the program.
Representative Johnson's recognized.
I just want to make sure I understand what you've just told us. This is a negotiated number predicated on available funds, predicated on... give me a little background.
Yep. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Berlina Crosley, Director of Oregon Employment Department. Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, to your question, the governor's office actually had agreed to that number when we were still under the old forecast. The new forecast came, which would have allowed, from a funding standpoint, additional dollars, but it also brought some things that the governor considered in the final discussions. One is that the economy is softening and the number of new jobs, which Jobs Plus requires, is tighter than it was when we were in the economy. So that's one of the major reasons. The other concern was that the types of layoffs that are occurring in family wage jobs and in the types of occupations, that some of those were areas that, at least in the past, in the early 90s, we saw employers that would lay off in this one kind of occupation and then use the Jobs Plus program to hire with a subsidized wage. And there was a belief that there might be some potential abuse that would occur because of the potential that worsening economy. So with those two reasons, it was believed that we would be best with a new Jobs Plus diversion to at least go into it with a slowed down, if you will, approach for numbers. If, in fact, the economy increases and there's more new jobs, there is nothing that prevents us to go front load that. John just talked about having 2450 per year for 4 years. You could have more on the front end unless, you know, if the economy worsens. You can assume. So that's an average of 2450 per year. But it does give us a chance to see how this new program, the program's substantially altered, as John described last time. In other words, instead of $6.50 per hour, we will be reimbursing only at $5. Instead of 6 months, we will only be reimbursing to 13 weeks. So there's going to be a gain of experience, if you will, of how that new program's going to operate.
So 13 weeks at the $5 this round is what the proposal is versus the 6 months, which
correct.
I believe was at $6.50 an hour, was
correct.
It before? Now, two lines of questioning. One, will the you indicated that there was some concern about the potential for abuse. Has there been any demonstrated or any actual concern for abuse in the past of the program?
As John indicated last time, we've had very few complaints from that standpoint. When we do have complaints, we do follow up. We do not audit the program. We're not funded to do that, and we have always said that we don't do that. But when we do have complaints, we very swiftly look into those. And if there are abuses, where it's shown that they have certified and it's not a new job or something like that, or the pay scale is not appropriate or a number of things, then we terminate the contract with the employer and they can't list jobs plus jobs with the department.
Okay. And the second line of questioning, tell me the, John, you've used the term, or you've used the quantity of 4,000 jobs. Had it been for a full fiscal 12 months in the past, how many was it actually?
I think over the 9 months, the number I have, and this is an estimate, I wasn't able to confirm this today, but maybe Ms. Crosley can, I believe it was about 3,150, somewhere in that neighborhood, over the course of the 9 months in the fiscal year.
That was over. That was actually during a 9 month period, which ends what month?
March 31st.
Through 3/31/01.
01, yes.
Okay.
That
and
one.
And if we gear up for 2450 over a period of 4 years.
Actually, that would, Mr. Chair, that would be over a period of each year.
Right,
for a period.
Each year for 4 years.
4 years, yes.
Okay. How many, in this line of questioning, I wanted to ask how many employees, Berlina, we had used for the program, what was the FTE for 3,150 participants in the program during the 9 months?
Mr. Chair, the committee has, in the past, have authorized 22, I believe, positions for job development and referral and also contract development. That's an average, and in fact, in the last few months with the popularity of that program, we were using somewhat more than that. But on an average, it always starts slower at the beginning of a biennium, and then you're operating full speed. So on the average, we were right around 24, I believe, but we were given 22 positions for that. And the since we hadn't any experience when we got the 22 positions, we did not know exactly how many that we would need, and the actual language that we had and the discussion with the legislature is that we felt that that would be enough if you, over a biennium, it tended to be almost enough, and there were times when we did exceed that, and we've been pretty open with the committee on those as well.
And so if we are... if we're going to basically be moving from what was the equivalent of 3,150 in 9 months, or a total of 4,000 over 12 months, and we drop down to 2,450 per 12-month period. That's a rather substantial decrease in the number of participants. If we just took 3,150 and it was taking 22 to 24 to provide for them, and we said, okay, fine, at 3,150 it's taking 24 positions, then based upon 2,450 over a full year, that's about a 22% decrease. Is that what we would expect would be reduced in FTE to service the Jobs Plus program?
Mr. Chair, Frank Ritchie is with me, and I think he actually prepared the fiscal impact, but it is my belief that you couldn't factor it down like that. The primary reason, as I just indicated earlier, is you have quite a bit different economy in which to contact employers and to get them to lift the job order, and they do have to be new jobs. So you're doing a lot of door knocking, if you will, to get a job listed that you didn't have to. We had people coming to us as they were familiar with the program last time. The second piece is that it's a substantially different program, and while I believe it will still be popular, and I do believe with the interest that has been shown by employers even to letters with the legislature, it is not as a desirable a program from an employer standpoint at 13 weeks versus 26 weeks and no payroll taxes being reimbursed, etc. In other words, I think my experience tells me that it's going to be a harder program to market to employers, even when they're going to be interested. I know that my staff in the past, when there has been somewhat downturns or when there are new people using the program, that it takes between 5 and 7 contacts to get one placement. And I think that's going to be even more difficult for a while. So I do not believe that you could factor down substantially those FTEs.
Even though the number that we're serving is significantly less, if we look at 4,000 versus 2,450, we've got a 40% drop.
Because at the 3,400, somewhere around that, at that particular point in time, we were using about 28 positions.
28.
Uh-huh. And see, on the average, then over the biennium, we were using around between 22 and 24.
Okay.
And so, you know, I just know that you're going to have probably at least the amount of 22 positions. And I believe that's what. Right? Do you have your fiscal with you?
Yes, the fiscal, thank you. 22.9 FTE is what the department submitted in there.
22.9.
Yes. Thank you.
In order to accommodate the 2,450.
It is.
Okay. So that's down from the 28 positions at a full 3,150.
Yes.
That's up from the 22 position authority that we'd had previously on the 3,150. And those folks do job development, job referrals, and then contract development as well.
Correct.
Okay. And these are already experienced people within the department, so there's not any turnover, basically, at that point?
Mr. Chair, there's almost always turnover, but we pull in from our existing employment service positions into these positions because you're right, it does need a more qualified, knowledgeable person to market to the employers. And so if you're asking about the pool, the majority of these people would still be there. We have, as has been indicated earlier, we have stopped any new development as of March. So we are servicing the contracts that are currently negotiated with employers, but we are not doing any job development and we are not writing any new contracts. All of those staff have been, based on attrition, transitioned into the regular employment service programs as those became vacant.
And that's based upon the the fact that you're in a wind-down mode.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, I do, and I, as we've indicated in the past, this has been a very popular program. I noticed in the packet here of information sent to President Gene Durfer that it appears that pretty much uniformly throughout Southern Oregon, that the program has been very, very popular. And my constituents have certainly come to me and voiced great support.
I got one of my own.
You got a package now, okay.
Got a package too.
And that probably doesn't have just Southern Oregon in it, then, does it?
No, mine's just my district.
Yeah,
okay.
Mine's my district too.
I was about to meet how the people just write to you. They're just within your own.
It's amazing how it sorts out like that.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, I was afraid that maybe the program was only being used in Southern Oregon at that point, Southeastern Oregon. Okay. Are there any questions relative to then, Senator Yee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, what is the cost difference between 22 FTE? Serving 2,450 people versus 28 FTE serving 3,150 people.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, I didn't calculate those per FTE's amount. It's.
Did you? Frank? I mean, I understand from Lori, the 22.9 FTE costs $25 million.
Chair Butler, Senator Yee, that the $25 million is the cost of the total program over the four-year period.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of those 22.9 positions for a biennium is about $2.5
million. $2.5 million?
That's the administrative cost for those positions serving the program.
Then follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, follow up, Senator.
So what does it cost for the 28 FTE?
Chair Butler, I don't have that with me.
Oh.
Maybe.
I just want to know, why don't we go for 28 FTE and serving at 6 months and reimburse at $650?
Mr. Chair and Cindy, I know that probably John will have his answer for that, but let me tell you that one of the reasons why those dollars are decreased for the cost of the program by our cost-benefit analysis is it takes $2 cost for every dollar benefit to the trust fund currently. And one of the main reasons why that occurs is something we didn't know going in about who would use it and what kind of jobs would be there to put people in. What has typically happened is it tends to be occupations that are around probably the $850. This is on the average. There are some that are $22, or some are right at $650, but on the average between $8 and $10 types of jobs. The individuals then going into those, if they stayed on unemployment, they would get less weekly replacement wage than they would get under the Jobs Plus program, which has basically meant it was more expensive because of the use with the lower income individuals. So what in discussing this with Geldwin and with the sponsors, the discussion went sort of like this. If we could more decrease the amount for people on unemployment insurance and then also limit the amount of time, a couple of things could happen. One, it would lower the cost and better the benefit ratio and make it more cost effective, but it would still allow a wage reimbursement program to operate to still get people back to work, if you will, from those layoffs. So those are the sort of trade-offs that we're looking at. Now, we have not operated in that new environment, so we're not quite sure. And then John had indicated in his testimony earlier that we're hoping that employers will hire more unemployment insurance claimants and also that they will keep them at the end of their. So it's kind of like they're getting a benefit, but they're also giving a benefit. And, John, you have a better way of saying that than I do.
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, question is, why have we cut back on the cost? We were asked to take a look at the cost effectiveness of the program, and after we'd had 4 or 5 years of experience with the program, we took a hard look at how to improve it. We felt that we could reduce the subsidy and still attract employers to participate, and at the same time that would help with the cost effectiveness. Just let me make one thing clear. On the cost effectiveness, we're only looking at cost effectiveness to the UI Trust Fund. That's the source of the monies. If you look at all the money that's spent across the board on these people, you'll find that flat out we save money. The question was, do we save money in this pot of funds? Across the board, we definitely save money. The question is, how much does it cost in this pot of funds? And we were trying to minimize the impact on the UI Trust Fund, which was something that numerous people had an interest in. And so that was the genesis of looking at reducing the costs on that side.
Thank you, John. Returning to Senator Yee.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So according to your analysis, Berlin, as far as the unemployment insurance fund is concerned, you have to invest $2 to get a dollar back.
Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, that's correct.
So at the reduced rate of 22.9 FTE, what kind of return on investment do you project?
I have not calculated that, but I believe that for a $25.3 million funding, the benefit to the trust fund was a little over $17 million. So there would only be a net impact of then less than that, the difference between those two numbers. So it's higher, it's better mm-hmm. than a 2-to-1.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a calculator with me, but it is better.
Senator Yee, please follow up.
So, Mr. Courtney, according to you, what is the overall, when you look into the overall picture, what do you believe is the return on investment if we put in $25 million worth of unemployment claim benefit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, I don't have those numbers in front of me. I do have a report that I can give to you that will show those specifically, but somewhere on the order of... I believe I'm going to take a rough guess at this. If you spend $25 million, I believe across the board you'd save somewhere in the order of $28 million. So maybe a net gain of $3 million, $4 million, somewhere in that range.
So how do you calculate the return on investment when you say $28 million return?
Mr. Chair, Senator Yee, you would calculate all of the costs across the board. We were very conservative in taking a look at those costs, and they include administrative costs, which are not calculated in the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund calculation because the diversion actually pays the administrative costs for these people. It includes the benefit calculation of what benefits they would have drawn from unemployment insurance, and then what would they were paid, what the cost of the wage subsidy was. Those are examples of the costs.
Let me just ask a question in that regard. This is much more than just a wage subsidy. We're talking about End Jobs Plus. We're talking about Work First. And that's really what this is all about, isn't it, John? Isn't that why we're going there, to get people into the workforce more quickly and then maybe make some lifestyle changes? Isn't that what this is all about? It's not just about $3 million.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is it's a bigger picture issue, I think, with the department and also with Jobs Plus. It's a piece that is consistent with the department's mission of finding people work quickly and good work, good careers, and getting them back on track, giving them good opportunities. And this is one important element in solving the problem for a portion of the pool of people they deal with, a portion of the people who are on unemployment insurance who can't otherwise find unsubsidized work. This is the way to get them back into the workforce and trained. And it is about keeping their skills fresh and gaining experience immediately.
I want to respond to that. The reason why I at least pause in answering a work first question, the Department of Labor and the this governor is concerned about a work first philosophy for unemployment insurance recipients. It was more a welfare recipient discussion that has been discussed around the work first scenario. And what got negotiated in the Senate Bill 874 was to preserve the suitability requirements that are required under both state and federal law for unemployment insurance claimants, which means that you look for the best suitable job rather than just any job. And so the changes that came to this committee now with the funding mechanism, House Bill 3441, had some changes in to, as John was just talking about, making it more conducive to placement and referrals to jobs that look at a person's previous experience, work experience, training, wages, those kinds of things. So if it's appropriate to go into work quickly, that you do that through a suitable job rather than just any work. So I want to make sure that you know that that's extremely important and has been accommodated in the bills that are in front of you.
Now the welfare portion of this is taken care of in the amendments to Senate Bill 874.
The welfare benefits are still authorized under Senate Bill 874. The funding mechanism is outside of this committee and outside of this discussion arena. The bills that are in front of you really are talking about the unemployment insurance portion or the dual clients, in other words, those that are on food stamp or in TANF and unemployment insurance. But the funding for the welfare side of Jobs Plus is not part of this discussion.
But I want to make absolutely certain that I understand that it is, in fact, the Employment Department's position that work first, work and I guess for lack of a better term, suitable work as soon as possible is still the Employment Division's thrust.
Yes.
We're after good long-term family pay jobs where these people can have a positive experience in the workforce as soon as possible, and then following that, then they would be given a long-term opportunity to continue and using the skills which they'd garnered. And this isn't this under 874, as I understand the amendment that came forward from the CDAF short-term funds. Wasn't that to assist those that were in particular need that had other multiple strikes against them, if you will, other difficulties where they were using other forms of public assistance and bringing them into the workplace quicker, really providing us the workfare over welfare?
Mr. Chair, as long as you stay with the suitable and the getting a person very quickly into suitable work, we're right with you. This is one tool, as I've testified, it's one tool to get a person back to work more quickly into a suitable job, and we use it very much for that, as you now know. As far as it being a work-first philosophy, for welfare, we do the job placement and the job referral for probably 75% to 80% of the Jobs Plus for even the welfare clients. And so if they're, you know, that particular reference has been almost any job is better than being on welfare. So we do work in that particular arena as well. And I just want to make sure that you know that there are differences between the program. It's not being used by just people in the unemployment insurance side that are low income or that have multiple barriers. There are people that are in, as Representative Smith and Representative Ringo has indicated in our prior discussions in this committee, is that anybody can qualify for unemployment insurance and not be, and most of them aren't on, other portions of assistance.
Public assistance.
They are only on unemployment insurance. Those people qualify for Jobs Plus. So it does two things. One, it gives people who have multiple barriers, maybe be on more than one program, it gives them an option. It gives people who are earning minimum wage or close to minimum wage but aren't on any other assistance also an opportunity. And then it can, with some of the layoffs that we're seeing right now, it could also serve an individual who is coming out of a high-tech.com scenario or manufacturing or because of the energy shutdowns. It could also give an individual an opportunity to get into a new type of position as well. So I want to make sure that you know that there are differences with the program as it's operated in the unemployment insurance arena.
Well, I guess the reason I'm asking that question is that I'm one of those kind of people that believe that there's value in work alone. I mean, even if you didn't get paid for it, there's value in working. But we're not going so far as to say we're not going to pay for work. But that's why I think that why originally Oregonians wanted to see the Jobs Plus, why we voted it in, and why we're there having this rediscussion of the issue today with the other diversion and wage subsidies running out, was that there still is value in going back to work, and I wanted to make certain that that was still the direction that the department is headed, that it still elevates the potential of getting folks back in. I recognize suitable work is an issue, but we need to get people back to work as soon as we possibly can. There's less social difficulties, I think, when we can address those early on. I believe that's the position of the
If you remember in the budget bill that you've already discussed, we have a claimant reemployment program of which we consider Jobs Plus a piece of that. So we are very much with you when you talk about people finding work, suitable work very quickly and getting back to work very quickly. People on unemployment is my experience, and there's some that, as you would find in any program, probably aren't like I'm talking about. But the majority of them, if you talk to them, they do not like to be unemployed. They are on unemployment through no fault of their own, and they want to work. So this is one tool in that toolbox.
Great. John?
Mr. Chair, if I could just follow on and maybe summarize, I think what our common vision is that it's tough for people who are unemployed to find their next job for two reasons. Sometimes they don't have the skills or the abilities to do the job and can't get it. They also often perceive that they can't get the jobs that they actually can get. Mm-hmm. The Jobs Plus program helps both of those situations. It helps those who can't get in the door because they don't have the skills by paying an employer to take the time, the extra time it's going to take to train them. It also helps those who perceive that they can't get in the door by providing a safety net so that if they actually do go out and try to get in the door, they'll have a little bit more encouragement to do that. And then if they fail, they have a fallback position.
Thank you very much, Sean. Senator Yee is recognized.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you are doing this now, but in the new jobs program, will you be tracking how many people, what percentage are staying on with the job they train or they work for 3 months, and how many do not? Do you do this now?
Mr. Chair and Senator Yu, yes, we do it now, and we will be doing it in the future. That's one that we are very significantly concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
I did meet with Senator Durfler in the last couple of weeks. He was interested in the same issue that you were talking about, and it is an area that we're going to have to work with employers on. It's less than 25% of employers currently retain the person that they've gotten through the Jobs Plus program. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't go back to work or they don't get work, but they are not being hired, the majority of them are not being hired permanently by the Jobs Plus employer. What it has tended to be is it's a stepping point into their next job because they do go back fairly quickly after their Jobs Plus job, which, is beneficial as well. We will be trying to follow up how quickly they go in, whether or not they believe, and most of them, I testified earlier, that 70% of the people who were in the Jobs Plus program were very, very supportive of the program. And that was including those that didn't get the job from the Jobs Plus employer. But it is an area of concern, and we will be working on that to make it more of a discussion with employers that they really do need to have more permanent retention of those without being too bureaucratic that keeps them away from the program.
Senator, you follow up?
So at the present time, you say about 25% of the employer keep the trial workers. Can't think of a better name. But now you're going to limit the trial period to only 3 months, so maybe there will be even less employers, or maybe not, keeping the employees. So it would be interesting to see a comparison.
Chair Butler, Senator, if I may respond. Right now, I think we have an average of 4 months of actual use of time in Jobs Plus, although it allows a full 6 months. So the scaling back to 3 months will not be actually cutting in the actual experience in half. It may only cut it by an average of a month. We don't know that yet, but that's not, that will be part of the experiment. And just for the record, we have conflicting statistics on how many participants are gain work after their Jobs Plus experience. A survey by the Employment Department of participants indicated that 68% reported having found unsubsidized jobs after the Jobs Plus experience. Of those, 68% said they found a job, 40-some-odd percent within that category found it with the same employer, the Jobs Plus employer. So, I think it was 42%, somewhere in that neighborhood. So 68% found with any employer, 42% or so found with the same employer. And the difference was, and this was 30 days out after their Jobs Plus placement had ended. The other statistic, I think, was based on employers reporting what they were seeing, and that was a voluntary reporting. So we don't know the answer. We know there's some statistics out there that get us around it, but we do know that there's opportunity for improvement, and that's something that we're hoping both the employer community and the Employment Department work hand in hand on trying to achieve with our new experiment.
So why is there a difference of data? You say 25% of the employers keep the workers, but he's saying 38% of the workers find employment with the employer, with the same employer?
Mr. Chair, as you know, when you design surveys or you ask certain questions, you get answers to the questions you ask. One thing that the Employment Department and Adult and Family Services does is when a contract ends with an employer that's had a Jobs Plus employee, they self-report whether they kept that person or not. It is based on that information that we have somewhere between 14 and 24% at any one time saying that they did hire the individual when the Jobs Plus job was over. So that's the employer's own information, okay? The information that we asked was how many individuals were hired by the Jobs Plus employer. And the answers that John reported is from that survey. What we believe that...
There were two questions within the Employment Department survey. One asked of employers how many did they actually hire. The one I was referencing asked the participant themselves, did you get a job within 30 days after the Jobs Plus experience? 68% said yes. 42% or so found it with the same one. And that was their report. So there's a 30-day gap there, which is one difference between the reporting. And the other difference is you had participants reporting versus employers reporting. So we know it's probably somewhere in between those numbers. We don't know exactly where. We hope we can improve.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Yee, and one other factor is an employer sometimes has like 8 jobs. And so they could say, yes, they did, but they may have only hired 3 of the 8 people, so that skews your numbers too. So it is something that we will try to find a better way of asking that question, and that's why it ranges. So all of the answers are right. It's just how we're going to use them in the scenarios that we're talking about. So we do know that some employers do and some don't. The question is how many. But what I think the discussion here should be is, do the people feel that it benefited them, the majority of whether they got the job or not? Most of them said they did. That's one. And secondly, the employers, whether they hired right at the end or whether the person went back on unemployment or had 30 days, but then they were brought back at a later time and still hired by that employer, is beneficial as well. So I think that a lot of those things happen. But we'll try to get better information for next time.
I hope you get a tracking system so you can see whether the program is really beneficial.
Thank you, Senator Yee. I think by and large, the Oregon, this program is unique to Oregon, is it not? By and large, can we say that through the piloting of the Jobs Plus program that we have in fact experienced a greater job satisfaction, greater job retention, greater employer acceptability or acceptance, if we will, of the actual move to work first as soon as possible?
Yes. Chair Butler, I think that one of the great factors in this unique experience to Oregon is that it's formed a public-private partnership that employers across the board think is fully unique and beneficial. And in fact, when we've talked to people who support the program, they say, look, we don't know which of the government programs we support, but boy, this one really seems to work. We're really happy with the partnership we've formed. We really like being involved. It gives the employment department a good opportunity to reach out to employers more effectively and to say, look, here's yet another value-added service that we want to provide to you. And the way I see it is, if employers want to step up to the plate, make a commitment in exchange for a subsidy that helps them make that commitment, they become more involved in their community. They become better community citizens, in a sense.
Thank you very much. And again, by way of reference to the packets which we've received from our various districts, we should recognize that out of the County Falls office, it indicates they've placed 1,130 and over 300 businesses within the program. So Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chair Butler. Hypothetical question. What would the impact be on the program if, rather than allowing this to be a statewide program, we targeted it to those areas of economic distress and increased the amount from $5 to $10.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, we'd have to run some numbers and some assumptions. One of the issues that generally comes up with programs in the past that I've been asked that question is whether there would be enough job development. The current program does require a new job, so whether there'd be enough new jobs to actually place the ones that have been displaced from, you know, another occupation. So we would have to make assumptions about how many job openings, how many employers would use it, and how many people would actually get hired to come up with a number. It would probably reduce the impact on the trust fund, in other words, the size of the program, just out of basic experience with other dislocated worker programs. But it is one scenario that we have not costed out.
Follow up, Representative Smith.
Chair Butler, would you, without trying to slow up the process, would you mind appointing a committee of one just to look at that question?
That'd be perfectly fine.
Just to bring
one,
back.
One possible savings that I can think of in the direction you're going would be that if you're concentrating that within the areas where there is some distress and other difficulty, that you may be able to save in staff as well, as opposed to spreading the staff out throughout the state and into areas where you may not have the distress, and concentrating the staff in the distressed areas, you could get perhaps better efficiencies and maybe be able to reduce the overall staff numbers too. You can concentrate those, basically a strike force team, if you will, into the areas where you have it. There could be some potential savings in that regard. John?
Chair Butler, Representative Smith, just quickly on a few points there. New job creation, as I understand, there was one primary study. It was done in Texas that showed that in any economy that grows by 3%, there's enough job churn or employment churn so that if you have 3% growth, you have roughly 23% new jobs and then a cutback of a loss of 20% jobs. So you have, 23% new businesses hiring people and 20% laying off and cutting down. So there tend to be quite a few new jobs in any economy. I don't know if that would be an issue here or not. I guess the second point on economic development is that we've been surprised, and I mentioned in the last hearing that we found that businesses are reporting that this is a significant economic development piece, which we did not recognize. But when you think about it, obviously when an employer wants to expand, one of the first places they look, unless they're really capital intensive, is they look on bringing more employees in. And that's a significant cost for most people. But that is a way to expand. Anecdotally, there was a business in the, I think it was in the Salem region here, it may have been the Clackamas region, where a woman who decided to grow a title business hired a Jobs Plus person. And that person she hired in to do marketing. And lo and behold, within the 6 months Jobs Plus experience, the person had brought in enough new business that she was able to be hired by the title company. So then they had a title company of two. This happened four more times, I believe, with Jobs Plus people at each stage. They hired in an accounting person and so on and so forth till they grew to a firm of like six people in the title company. And that's how they grew the business. That was the primary vehicle. So I think it has a lot of merit. But I would caution that this has been a program statewide that has really solved some problems for some individuals at sort of the individual level who have had some serious barriers and need to find employment. And
by the authority vested in me as the chair, I'm going to appoint the ad hoc committee of one to go ahead and do some research on that and report back both as to the concerns that John has expressed relative to the issue statewide, and then perhaps working with Ms. Crosley to find any efficiencies that might be extracted by concentrating your strike force teams in those areas where you are looking at distress. And I, you could try that at various levels in the model as to the subsidy, the wage subsidy that could be provided, and you might be able to find some efficiencies there. I still like the idea, however, of continuing on a statewide approach at the reduced subsidized, even from the $6.50 that it has been to the $5. And we do have some conceptual or some actual amendments with some conceptual changes. I'd like to have Lori Byerly report on those now, if you would, please. But I sense that we have some general agreement amongst the parties here, a good public-private partnership. And do I also sense that in the governor's office we have buy-in?
Mr. Chair, I talked to Mark Gibson prior to this, and with these amendments and the discussions that we've had, the governor, should he get a bill in front of him, he could sign this particular bill.
Let's give him two or three bills here. Let's get 3441 and 874.
With those two together, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Please, Lori.
Chair, Beth, I'm members of the subcommittee. The amendments in front of you do primarily two things. They provide for the program to receive a loan from the Supplemental Employment Department Administrator Fund for the time frame before the diversion dollars start kicking in. The diversion must take place with House Bill 3441. There has been a change based on, I believe, some changes in how the diversion will be done that will allow this money to be paid back to the Supplemental Employment Department Administrative Fund by July 1, 2002. And if maybe real briefly you could explain what that change in the diversion is.
Mr. Chair, what the diversions that will still need tables in the House Bill 3441 in which to accomplish the diversion of the $25.3 million, we were having to borrow at particular points in time to avoid a tax increase. With the new forecast, we do not have to do that. So we can front-load, if you will, the borrowing and pay it off a lot quicker, which is of all of our interest, and allows us to move the payback from third quarter 2005 to by July 1, 2002.
That's as a result of the entire workforce in the state, the actual unemployment rates that we're presently experiencing, increased unemployment, and then the modification to the level, I guess, level four or step four in the overall employment or unemployment rate schedule.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Larry, please.
And Chair Butler, members of the subcommittee, the second change, the second thing this amendment does is it puts an emergency clause so that the program changes are effective July 1, 2001, so the program can continue. And I believe there will be some amendments for House Bill 3441 as well that will need to be drafted. And then there will also be a piece that we will do that will provide the limitation for the program that will be put into Senate Bill 874. And I think that should take care of all the pieces that need to happen before these can go forward. I believe on Tuesday, Representative Johnson had some questions about the number of participants in the program that had come from Gel Blend. And unless you brought something with you, I had some old information that I was going to provide. This was information that was provided during the Employment Department hearing. Well, actually, I think it was about the same time we had Employment Department hearings. This was information that was given to John Britton, and it's from Janie McAllister at the Employment Department. It has to do with participants in the Justice Program.
This is dated February 8th. This would still be relative to the current, John.
Yes, so then.
Chair Butler.
Representative Smith.
I'm not sure what the definition of occurrence is.
Yeah, I think we need someone to explain this.
Okay, my Chair Butler, members of the subcommittee, my understanding is an occurrence is anytime one of these participants in the program gets a job. It could be an employment insurance recipient. It could be a shared client between Adult Family Services and an employment department, or it could be a individual that's simply receiving services from the Adult Family Services Division. So it's any of those instances. Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, she indicated, what she indicated is correct. It's basically when we have a contract for an individual, and then we counted up the number of occurrences for contracts and referrals and placements. And so if there was a contract written and a person actually referred and hired out of that program, it shows as an occurrence.
Representative Johnson?
This document is some months old. Is there any, I'm going to use a word that sounds stronger than I mean it to, auditing that goes on to see if these are occurrences from the folks that went, for example, to Cascade Auto Glass. I just picked that one. 23 occurrences. Is there any checking several months later to see if any of those folks have stayed employed?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, there is not. What we do is follow them up based on wage files. We do a cross match of whether they did stay with that employer, and we do keep track of that. While you were out, we had a discussion that that's an area that these numbers came actually from Adult and Family Services, because the payment on the contracts go through a direct pay unit, and that had not been a data field that was kept. So these were having to go back by printed records as well as actually looking at individual contracts to even get the numbers that we were reporting.
So follow up, Mr. Mm-hmm. My question is, for example, you have a Boys and Girls Club on here. I have some familiarity with Boys and Girls Club, all positive. Mm-hmm. But when there were 13 occurrences at a Boys and Girls Club, unless this is a huge facility, this is 13 occurrences over some period of time with no idea of how many of those 13 occurrences actually resulted in somebody maybe staying with this chapter of a Boys and Girls Club. Is that a correct interpretation?
That is a correct interpretation, and it is something, Representative Johnson, that we pledge will be different next time. We are changing our data entry on the employment department side for the UI funds, and we're hoping that if it goes through the direct pay unit or through the department, that that's something that we could tell you next time.
Representative Smith.
I really do like golf as much as I know that. I'd be interested in knowing the location of where the businesses are, and then also the wage level of the jobs that are being created. Would it be possible to get that information?
As a committee of one, we'll be able to find that out very rapidly and very easily and report that back to us.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
I'm just looking, I mean, you can see from some of the names, Umatilla County, I'm making the assumption that's Umatilla County, but I mean, you can pick out that they're all over, Clackamas, Medford, Salem, Lancer is in Bend. There is pretty good geographical diversity. I'm still interested in seeing the work product of the committee of one to actually identify them, but just at first glance, it seems like there's at least some geographic diversity in this.
Yes, John.
Chair Butler, we do know that the average pay rate is somewhere between $8.50 per hour and $8.91 per hour. I don't 850 and 891. I think in February it was 891 when we last looked at it. I think that's dropped somewhat since then. So there may be a more current figure. Chair Butler, if I could just point out on this document one correction. Under Geldwin business names, Maritidal, I believe, is a subsidiary of Geldwin. Higher Calling is not, has no relationship to Geldwin. It's owned by Dick Wendt personally. I think we talked about this last time, just to clarify. Geldwin, of course, and then Running Y Resort, I believe, may be a subsidiary as well, but it's definitely connected to Geldwin.
Higher Calling, we talked the other day, and you did identify that it as being wholly owned by Mr. Wendt.
Yes, that's true, and it was purchased. This period also looks at late 1998 through January 31st, 2001. Mr. Wendt acquired that corporation April 1st of 2000, so he's held it just...
This is the experience of Higher Calling throughout the entire period from 1998, or is that just the Dick Wendt experience?
It appears to me that it's since late 1998, but I haven't. This is the first I've seen this document. So
this could have been.
This would have been, I believe, since late 1998. Okay. I'd be surprised if it were.
So that would have been before Mr. Wendt actually was involved.
True.
Okay. That's true, Mr. Chair. But I would tell you that the majority of it is after.
After.
I mean, it's been my experience.
That represents the total of the companies represents approximately 14%. Of the U.S. statewide, if my numbers come out correctly. Yes, Representative Johnson is recognized.
Two questions, I think. I'm still trying to understand everything I don't understand about this program. It's possible that Higher Calling could have passed through the jobs to anything else on the rest of this list. Is that...
It is a temporary placement agency that does referral to another company. Another legislator on the Senate side has asked if we had a program, a data processing program that would get to the third-party employer. And it is not automated. We do have the contract, so we could find that out. We have not done that. But it is, that information is available through the archives.
Then another question, Mr.
Chair.
I noticed that some of the names on the list, the business names, appear to be public agencies. And how does this salary subsidization work when an employee is going into public employment? And there may be salaries fixed by contract.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, the wage subsidy pays them at the same rate as generally temporary employees or an amount that has been bargained. So it is a temporary employee, which would be at the rates that they can hire typically from like St. Vincent de Paul, Kelly Camp, and some of the other ones. So it'd be probably right around that $7.58 range.
Follow-up.
Last question. Several times you've made references to data maintenance, and one of the things that may have been expressed in this hearing, and I just don't recall it, was how much customization of your record keeping are you doing to track this program in a way that this panel and other members of the legislature are asking you to?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, one of the good things about this program has been a public-private partnership, and it's a partnership between two very large state agencies. But one area that has not been as effective has been the reporting from both agencies. We collect different data and we collect it differently. At the front end of the program, the Jobs Plus program, the majority of people who were being referred and subsidized wages being paid for was almost on the welfare side. Over the last year and a half to 2 years, maybe even longer, it has more gone on the unemployment insurance side. We have an incredible amount of data. I know some of you have asked for it, and so you have lots of reports. But it's still an area that needs some work. And with this particular new authorization, if there are things that you would like to say, things that I have heard, we will be putting those into our data collection and reporting.
We do have other committees starting, and Betsy Earls is here on behalf of AOI, and we would like to have your testimony, Betsy, for the record. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, are we excused?
No, we're not excused. They're going to come down and nail us very shortly.
Oh.
So speak fast.
I'm very fast. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls, representing Associated Oregon Industries. And not to put too fine a point on it, but we're appearing in support of Senate Bill 874 and House Bill 3441. And I'd be happy to answer questions, but I think you've heard a lot already.
Thank you very much, Betsy. We appreciate your support and testimony. Are there questions specific that you'd like to give to Ms. Earls on behalf of this committee to pass through the AOI? We do appreciate your support. This is appears to be a very great program from years past experience, and we appreciate and I know that AOI has been in there pitching and helping to make this work. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, again, we will meet on Tuesday next, and we'll just go ahead and re-advertise for both Senate Bills 874 and House Bill 3441 for Tuesday, and we'll come back and hopefully, it's a hope at that time, that we'll have all of the necessary amendments to this, and we'll bring the plus a full subcommittee, right? Well, subcommittee of one will give his report as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate your being here today.